Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening on the ESPN app, our podcast, wherever you get your podcast. We appreciate it. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars, yelling, give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to call you a hater. Coming up on this episode of The Right Time, DJ Mike Hitman will be taking your phone calls. Also, we'll talk about the chaos that's going on with the Rockets, but was there a trade in the NBA or something? So how you feeling, Gabe? Lakers got Anthony Davis. You are a Lakers fan. They got a superstar and your favorite kind of player in the NBA. You know what kind of player that is?
Clutch Clint.
That's right. How you feeling? Is that your list?
That's my list. That is, I had to rip it from the wall here in this studio up in Bristol. I was off the bandwagon after all the craziness with Pelinka and Magic Johnson. Once I thought I was out, they pulled me back in.
Oh, I mean, Anthony Davis is there. You got to come right back.
But I'm not coming back in the same way I was before. I'm damaged now.
Really? You deserve to treat yourself better than that, Gabe.
For me now, it's kind of gotten to the point where I can't live and die with these things.
Mm-hmm.
And I just need to be able to appreciate it for what it is and be like, all right, you know, if the home team wins, the home team wins. If they lose, they lose. But I'm not living and dying with that anymore.
It's only going to take a couple of oops and you're going to be right back. You're going to be right there. The thought of LeBron James and Anthony Davis on the same team, like, I feel like independent of anybody's rooting interest, just if you like basketball, that thought has to be amazing. That thought has to be. I mean, these are two of the top 7 players at the very least in the NBA right now. Anthony Davis is probably one of the 2 or 3 best defensive players in the NBA right now. It would help to play with LeBron if his game stretched out a little bit farther, because he's got a decent mid-range game and he's got a strong long 2 game, but he's not at the place yet of having a 3-point game, which is really helpful if you're going to play around LeBron James. But no, this is the beginning, except for the fact that the Lakers are still incompetent. Right? Let me tell you how you know the Lakers are incompetent. When your man, what's his name? David Griffin. When David Griffin started hitting them dudes with all them pick swaps and exceptions and all of that stuff, you know what that is? We are dealing with an amateur. That's what you do when you believe you are dealing with an amateur. You just get on the back end of that deal and just be like, yeah, well, how about this?
And Rob Blinker's like, yeah, okay. That sounds so, yeah, we'll do that. We'll do that. That's fine.
Yeah, now how about a little bit of this?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, okay. Cool. There we go.
The other thing is, have you heard about the timing of the trade, Gabe?
Yes, I have. In terms of all of the extra money that could go one way or the other, and Anthony Davis's trade kicker and
yes,
cap room and all that stuff.
All right. So basically, the Pelicans want this trade done on the 6th of July. But if that were to happen, the Lakers would not be able to sign a free agent with the max cap space that they have left, because Anthony Davis would then be absorbing that cap space, right? It's a tricky thing with the cap, but either way it goes, if the Lakers can push off when that trade is completed until July 30th, then they'll have the room in order to sign a free agent and make this trade for Anthony Davis. So with the number 4 pick, the Lakers would make the pick for the Pelicans, and then it all goes from there. This is something that a general manager is supposed to know, or at the very least, this is something that somebody who works in the general manager's office is supposed to know, or at the very least, this is something that in your office should be on an Excel spreadsheet. Like, we don't even need you to do nothing that's involved in 2019. They had macros way back in the day, dog. You should just be able to put in the names and what happened and, you know, the mechanics of the deal, and it should be able to tell you, hey, this is what the cap situation is. If the Lakers didn't realize when they made the trade that this would mess up the cap situation, that tells me that they didn't even think about the cap situation before they made the trade, right? Because it sounds like, by all accounts, it sounds like the Lakers are like, cool, we're going to trade for Anthony Davis, and then we're going to go get somebody else. And then they traded for Anthony Davis, and they're like, well, let's go get somebody else. And maybe that's when Excel man came upstairs and was like, we can't go get nobody else.
I'm like, what do you mean we can't get nobody
else? No, we can't get nobody else. We ain't got no space. You ain't looked this up. Like, I shared the document with you. I told you how to use it. You didn't put this stuff in. Remember when we had that thing and I had everybody in the office and I was showing you how to use Yes, Rob. That's why this was what it was. And they better be ready to kill Pelinka if he messed this up too. Cause if it had been Magic, we'd have all been out there about how Magic wasn't supposed to have that job, how Magic didn't know what he was doing. He just got hired for being Magic Johnson, so forth and so on. And it would be a legitimate point to make under those circumstances. it's even more indefensible with Pelinka because Pelinka's an agent. I can understand Magic not really knowing and understanding the CBA. Nobody should understand the CBA better than Rob Pelinka because he is an agent. Like, he's supposed to know how this affects all kinds of people in all kinds of ways. He did not know this. And so now, Gabe, your incompetent Lakers might actually mess this up.
So here's my counter to that. And I'm not protecting Pelinka and all this because this is really bad. But I was listening to the Low Post the other day and he had Kevin Arnovitz on. Mm-hmm. And Arnovitz was talking about how this is basically like a lesson in, you know, negotiation strategies where one side just absolutely fleeces the other one when they realize that, oh, okay, I'm going to be able to get what I want and more. So I'm just going to start throwing in a bunch of things in there because they clearly don't understand this. But at the end of the day, Pelinka still landed Anthony Davis.
Yes.
So given the fact that he landed Anthony Davis, is there a scenario for you where all of this other cap stuff that he didn't know and that doesn't matter or people forget this?
Okay. Here's my read on that because I don't think the Lakers got fleeced.
You don't think that all of the pick swaps constitute a fleecing?
No, I think that I don't think the Lakers had to do all that to ultimately get the trade done. The reason I don't think it is a fleecing is because of what you just said. They landed Anthony Davis.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, like all the stuff that they gave up is worth it in order to get Anthony Davis. What the Pelicans did was extract as much surplus as they possibly could from the deal. But the value of what the Lakers gave up, especially given that you got to discount all those picks down the line for time, you know, given that, no, this was a fair amount for the Lakers to give up in order to get Anthony Davis. That's why I don't think they got fleeced. But if you got Anthony Davis and then you were not able to sign somebody else to max out these LeBron years, you still made a terrible mistake. And that mistake would be indefensible. So like the actual structure of the trade, I really don't have a problem with. And I also don't really have a problem with it because I think Rob Pelinka is operating on that. Like I ain't going to be here in 2025. So who cares? So from there, I don't think they got fleeced per se, but I do think this is a trade that an amateur makes while dealing with a professional. Does that make sense?
Yes, that makes total sense.
Yeah, I mean, no. I think a whole lot of people need to get their minds right about that part. If you got a chance to make a trade to get Anthony Davis, you get Anthony Davis. Like, that's it. I felt that way about the Melo trade with the Knicks. Remember, I was like, man, the Knicks just gave up too much in that trade for Carmelo. Do you remember who some of those people were that they were talking about that the Knicks shouldn't have given up? Remember at one point it was, no, man, you can't give up Mozgov.
Can't give up Wilson Chandler.
Yeah, like, I can't do what? Like, you go out and ask people who the names are of the guys that were in the trade. Do you remember them?
Other than Mozgov and Wilson Chandler.
Wasn't it Raymond Felton?
Danilo Gallinari?
Yeah, I guess he might have been in that.
Yeah, he was pretty good.
Yeah, but I mean, but like, okay, like none of that. The Knicks made the second round of the playoffs a couple years later. Their problems that they had afterward were not about what they gave up in the trade. It was about them being the Knicks.
And with Gallinari, there's kind of an echo here with Ingram, where Gallinari just couldn't ever get past his injury issues.
Yes.
And he had a nice year with the Clippers last year, right? But that was like his one healthy year in like 5 years.
Right.
So what if Ingram doesn't even get healthy?
And I tell you, I went and looked at some of the advanced numbers on Ingram. I'm a little more bullish on Ingram than a lot of other people
are. You're kind of a stand for Ingram.
Yeah, I mean, also, I want to look at those numbers, man. It don't look much different than Andrew Wiggins. Seriously. Like,
am I vindicated on the Ingram stuff then?
Yeah, kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
I still think there's a chance, though, right? There's something I like about Ingram in his game, but in terms of what he's actually produced, this is a make-or-break season for Brandon Ingram. It's fair to have questions about Brandon Ingram at this point. So they gave him up. They gave up Lonzo Ball, and they gave up Josh Hart. But I feel like people do a whole lot more talking about Josh Hart than I've seen anything to merit all that talking.
Yeah, I mean, as like someone who follows the Lakers, I've always thought that he was an underrated piece. So I'm kind of disappointed we didn't get to hold on to him.
Yeah, like but just that, right? He's a piece.
Yeah, notice I started saying we again.
Yes, I did. It just takes a little while, baby. So they gave those guys up. They traded what the number four pick in the draft. If you're the Lakers, that's a no brainer. I mean, if you're the Pelicans, you take it. But if you're the Lakers, that you can have that. What is it? A 2021 pick that is top eight protected. So if it's outside the top eight, the Pelicans get it.
Yeah, there are three first round picks in the deal, and they're all like pick swaps. Okay, we can push it back to the next year if we don't like it. I mean, they have the control of the Lakers draft for the next half decade at the least.
Yeah, and if you're the Lakers, you give that up. That's fine. You go ahead and you give that up. The only thing I would say for the Lakers in terms of trading all those back-end picks that they do have to be concerned with is they're also betting on Anthony Davis's body, and that's a risky bet. Now, maybe you're betting on the idea that he's going to leave New Orleans, which had a terrible medical staff, and be in a place where it would be better. I don't know how much better the Lakers' medical staff is, but I'm assuming it's better than the one that they have in New Orleans.
They just let go of their medical staff like a year or so ago.
Right, so maybe this one's better? I don't know. The New Orleans staff has such a bad reputation that if I had to guess, whatever medical staff he's going to is going to be a better one.
Yes.
Right. That's what I got there. But you're still betting on Anthony Davis' body. Like, I'm not going to pretend as though there aren't risks here for the Lakers. But I also feel like you can't pretend as though, given what we know right now, they have as good a chance to win the NBA championship as anybody else. Like, do you have any idea? I mean, granted, free agency is going to answer some of this. Do you have any idea who's going to win the West next year?
Yeah, it's like you said. You have no idea really until free agency happens because everybody's willing to crown the Clippers. America's team. Once they get Kawhi, that's it. That's a wrap for the rest of the league because Kawhi won this year's championship. So next year he's going to win too.
But I don't think he's going to go to the Clippers.
And you think he's going to stay, correct?
I think he's going to sign a 2+1 deal in Toronto and get to that 10th year of his contract, and then he can sign the big dog.
And they should be able to retain the rest of the roster, you know, in Toronto. I think the only free agent that they have is Danny Green.
Yeah. But here's my question, because I don't know if that team, like, I wouldn't be surprised if that's like the 2011 Mavericks, right? Like one of those things that happens one time and then you keep it moving. But I look at that from the standpoint of the Clippers. Who are the Clippers going to land? I don't think they're going to get Jimmy Butler. I think Jimmy Butler's going to stay in Philadelphia. I'd be shocked if Jimmy Butler leaves Philadelphia. Klay Thompson is going, even if he comes somewhere, he's not going to play next year. I don't think Kevin Durant is going anywhere. It doesn't look like the Warriors are going to be up for trading Draymond Green, though I think they should really, really consider it. Who are these guys that are going to do this in free agency? And Kevin Durant's not going to be playing. So I don't know how exactly this is going to go. I don't know who's going to win a championship. I just know in the West, there's going to be a team that has LeBron James and Anthony Davis. The Warriors are basically just going to have Steph Curry and Draymond Green next year. And that's not, they might will their way to like 48 to 50 wins or something like that, but I don't think that's a team any of us think is going to win a championship. Are you prepared to say that the Denver Nuggets are going to be in that place to win a championship? Do you feel like maybe with Portland, when Nurkic comes back, that they'll be in a position to win a championship, but they'll still be out there with those two little bitty guards? Who are we talking about that's going to win the West? The Lakers have as good a chance as anybody else to win it, and they're operating on what is basically a 2 to 3 year window of LeBron James' contract.
Yeah, I mean, all those teams you mentioned, you have like 3 or 4 teams that are all kind of hovering around the top that are maybe like one move away from contending.
Yeah.
The Nuggets, the Jazz, the Blazers, and don't forget the Thunder, man.
And it's funny because I had.
Yeah, I mean, they've got Paul George, they've got Russell Westbrook, and they have the potential trade ship of Steven Adams.
But the thing about Russell Westbrook is he might be shot.
Yeah.
Like, I think we're going to know a lot about Russell Westbrook early in the season. And the thing I've told people, the thing that worries me about Russell Westbrook is he was like a 65% free throw shooter last year after being, you know, in the 80s and as high as the mid 80s at different points.
Did you ever read the piece about why he's so bad at free throws now?
I did not.
I'd like to give the writer credit for it, but I can't remember. Essentially, there was a rule that went into effect that changed the clock for how much time you got to shoot a free throw.
Mm-hmm.
And he has this routine, and you know how players are with their free throw routines, where he doesn't have time to do the routine anymore.
Oh.
So he literally dropped 15%
in
his free throws just because he's not allowed to do his full routine anymore.
Interesting, because I was worried that his legs were shot. You know what I mean? Because like, given the rest of his shooting had gone down, I thought it was all connected, but that is very interesting. I did not know that.
Yeah, I'll find that piece and I'll put it in the show notes so people can read it.
Cool. And also, I still don't know, but I still wonder if he's done.
Yeah, I mean, that's a totally fair question. Like, you forgot about them in the list of contenders, and so did everybody else.
I also didn't mention the Rockets. Like, we'll talk about them later, but I didn't even mention them. But the West looks wide open. The East looks wide open. It looks, you know what it looks like we have right now? They wanted a league with parity. I thought that was a horrific idea. The idea that we needed parity in the NBA, because my belief was that the league had been at its best when there were 3 or 4 really, really good teams and then everybody else, right? Somebody might have a chance to pull an upset or something like that, but I thought that was the way the league was best. Part of what that was, though, was that there weren't nearly as many good players in the league before as there are right now. And now there are so many good players in the league that this notion of parity is not parity, meaning we just have a bunch of mediocre teams. I feel like we got a bunch of teams with a handful of really good players all around the league.
Yeah, I'm like really excited for next season.
Yeah, already. Like this is, by the way, Gabe, are we those people? Because we do, this is the first podcast we're doing since the Raptors won a championship, and I ain't got him in here nowhere in our show.
It says a lot about the finals that everybody's just like, all right, great, they won the chip. Now let's turn the page to next season.
That Canada thing.
Yeah.
Well, A, the Canada thing, and B, the Lakers traded for Anthony Davis 2 days after.
Yeah, they stole the narrative.
Yeah, like, and you know, I am one of those people who understands why folks get mad when they're like, yo, why y'all ain't talking about basketball? All y'all want to talk about is trades and free agency. I totally get you, but they traded for Anthony Davis. And can we send a shout out to Rich Paul? Everybody's like, Rich making his client look bad. Rich doing this, Rich doing that. Rich had one job. Get you, make sure you don't go to Boston. Rich had job two. Get you to LA. He pulled them both off. And he did the job for two different clients at the same damn time. Say what you want about that dude. He came up. The Lakers came up. Anthony Davis came up. Y'all want to talk about the Pelicans now? All right, now I want to start this part of it by getting something out of some people's heads, right? And I understand why people look at the world this way and why people view trades this way, but it would behoove you to view things differently. And here's what I mean. Stop asking who won the trade. No matter what the trade is, don't ask who won the trade. Now, if you want to ask who won the trade and entertain the possibility that a trade can have multiple winners, then feel free. But if you look at a trade as though there is only one winner or there's only one loser or something like that, now you're looking at this wrong. Here's why I say this. A trade is not a competition between the two teams trading with each other. Those teams are in competition with their own level of utility. It's less about how good the other person is doing in the trade than it is about how well am I doing in this trade, right? What am I getting out of this? And so I say for the Lakers, I don't think they got fleeced because I think they got Anthony Davis, and every sacrifice they made on the back end for me would be worth it in order to get Anthony Davis. I mean, don't forget Anthony Davis is 26. Yeah, 26. So yeah, you make that deal. And if they want you to do some stuff deep into the future, whatever, we'll worry about that when we get here. But we're going to make that deal. Don't blame them at all for making that decision. You got LeBron James. You think you got 2-3 years of him. You max out those 2-3 years you have, and then we pay the bill when the bill comes due. Boom. Right? However, the Pelicans came up. I mean, came up. They got the Lakers to give up a bunch of stuff that I don't think the Lakers should have given up. Again, I still think the Lakers, if this was what the conditions were that the Pelicans had, this is the trade you make. I just don't think that these were necessarily the conditions that the Pelicans had. I think if they had pushed back on some of this stuff, the Pelicans would have still made the trade. But they did not push back on this stuff. So what do the Pelicans have right now? They got a mountain of draft picks that are going to stretch into the middle of next decade. They have the top four picks in this draft at the time of this recording, because I think they'll trade the number four pick in this draft if they can. I just don't know who the team is that will want the number four pick in a two-player draft. I don't really know that, but I think they're going to try to find a way to get somebody else in there. Zion is on the way. They are going to be in what I think is a fascinating position, which is they are moving on from a superstar and maybe literally the best equipped team ever in the NBA to make moves after the trade for a superstar. Like, when you start thinking about superstar trades, and I do not count the Carmelo Anthony trade as a superstar trade, because I don't think Carmelo Anthony was a superstar. I think Melo was a very, very, very good player, but I think superstar was a stretch even at his best. But as far as superstar trades go, the best haul I can think of anybody getting was the haul that the Bucks got for Kareem Abdul-Jabbar in 1975. Like, the Bucks got at least two players out of that trade who had their jerseys retired. They got players. And the Bucks, by the way, were very good through the 1980s. Right? Like, they set themselves up to be a very competitive team down the line there. You go look at all this stuff that the Pelicans have right now to sit on, to be able to package, to be able to turn into something else with a player that it's fair to think will be a cornerstone for at least the next 10 years, while you've got a point guard who is a legitimate all-star and maybe the best defensive point guard in the league. And if you want to play this out to the future, you'll have more players coming in, or you'll get to a point where you're like, yo, man, we got too many young dudes. We can package this and make this into another player. For a team that is in a location that is not exactly a free agent destination, David Griffin 100% justified his hiring in a way that I find to be amazing. And by the way, in a way that I think is an indictment of the Lakers for the fact that they didn't hire David Griffin to run their basketball operations when they had the opportunity. Forgot about that part, right? Lakers had a chance to hire this dude. Instead, this dude just pulled off a trade that is really remarkable for a team in the position that the Pelicans are in. Great for him. Great for New Orleans. Great for Zion. Like, this trade created two teams that are now far more interesting than they were last year, right? Like, neither one of those teams was good last year. Now somehow it looks like both of them can be good, because straight up, the Pelicans can be good this year. Not great, not like win a championship, but they can be in a position where they could be good, be like a 5-6 seed in the West. They could do that. And as much as the whole game plan, you know, the processes and all that stuff like that, the idea is, now you need to tank this out and go out there and get you more super high draft picks. And then that's how you stack out the team. I think once you got Zion, like, it would help if you had another number one in the draft caliber player. But that's not the only way for you to construct a roster. And if Griffin, you know, can pull that off, this team can be good in 2-3 years. Like, they legitimately could be good. And, like, I mean, when I say good, I mean, like, really good in about 2 or 3 years. And that would be a hell of a turnaround from everything that happened and them having to give up Anthony Davis. Now, where I feel bad for Anthony Davis is, Gabe, it ain't going to be long before people be like, oh, man, they traded Anthony Davis and then they got good. Maybe he wasn't that good. And they're going to kind of ignore the fact that finally they're demonstrating some measure of competence, and that kind of helps.
Yeah, also, too, and he's a supremely better second option than he is a first option.
You think so?
Just because his strength is being a finisher, right? Not taking folks off the dribble.
Oh, I see what you mean.
So I think, like, this situation is it couldn't be a better situation for Anthony Davis right now than being the number two to LeBron, right?
Got you. So I think what you're saying is, it's less about him being a second option than the fact that he doesn't have to be the one, like, with the ball in his hand to make it happen.
Yeah, exactly.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, I agree. I think it'll be very interesting to see how he plays off the ball with LeBron drawing the attention that he is able to draw. And, like, for example, when they brought in Cousins to play with Davis, and that went pretty well, the only thing is Davis plays better as a center than he does as a power forward, and he had to play power forward when he was out there with Cousins. And so that one wasn't necessarily going to work as well as people had hoped either. They got really good that year after Cousins got hurt. The second round of the playoffs, they had that sweep over Portland after Cousins got hurt. But now, so who else they got on that team, Gabe? I'm talking about all these assets and stuff they got stacked and all these players. I don't know how many of them I know by name.
Man, they got Jrue Holiday. They just lost Julius Randle. He opted out of his deal.
Yeah.
But they really filled it out with this trade, man.
But they've got enough that they can turn it into something else.
Yes, they do.
That's what I think the big thing is. It's less about who the guys are that they have in the moment. They have dudes that they can turn into something else. And that is really all you can ask for if you make this sort of trade. Also for the Lakers, let me ask you this. You know, you've been paying attention to all of this. I feel like what the Lakers offered at the All-Star break was better than anything that the Pelicans were going to get this offseason, because Boston wasn't in a position to do it now that this all came around.
Good God. I mean, it was certainly a better deal that they offered midseason. I mean, it also included Kuzma and the pick. So now, instead, they didn't get Kuzma. They still got the pick, right? It was a number four pick. Back then, they didn't know what the nature of the pick would be, but they didn't get Kuzma.
I was one of those people that thought the Pelicans should have just made that trade to avoid the drama and avoid the possibility of Anthony Davis coming back this year. And I wasn't certain that they could get a better package, because the idea was that once they get more bidders into the market, then the package will get better. That, you know, that was what the thought process was at the time. I still think that package they offered at the All-Star break was going to wind up beating any package that anybody else offered. But I have to give the Pelicans credit from the standpoint that they did do better than they would have done if they made that trade at the All-Star break. The only thing is, I think where my presumption went bad was I was presuming that Dell Demps would still be the general manager.
Yeah.
And Dell Demps would not have pulled this trade off.
Yeah, you're right about that.
You know what I mean? Like he wasn't good enough to make this happen. He wouldn't have been able to pull this off. David Griffin coming in and pulling it off, boom. Yeah, way to go. You guys made the right move waiting. And if the Pelicans' idea was we're not going to make this trade until we get Dell Demps out of here, that was also a great idea.
Now, I've got a conspiracy theory for you.
Oh, here for it.
So, David Griffin, he spent the last 2 years of his life, or last year at least, I read in the Ramona Shelburne piece, living in Sonoma, California, which is like 10 minutes from where I grew up, so I have like a little bit of a viewpoint here with him. So he takes the Pelicans job, because there are only so many of these jobs, right? You take the Pelicans job, you become the architect of their future. You know you're going to have the Anthony Davis trade there. I'm wondering if you took the Pelicans job on a little bit of a hunch that the Pelicans were going to become the Supersonics in a couple of years. And he'd be moving out to Seattle. He'd get to move into that brand new building that they're building up there to house the NHL team that they just got, which will probably be able to house the Sonics as well. Go down to New Orleans for a couple of years, do a little bit of rebuilding, move into that building in Seattle with a contender.
Over David Stern's dead body. Seriously. Like, being in New Orleans was, and I don't know how much Silver cares about this, but being in New Orleans is very important to David Stern. Like, after the storm and everything else, he felt the league had a duty and an obligation to stay in that city. Coincidentally, David Stern also, as we hear, kind of wanted to get a team back in Seattle. But I don't think that the league needs to be concerned that David Stern would be mad if they made this trade, but I'm here to tell you, David Stern would be furious, and I bet he can still get on the phone with some people and make some things happen. I don't think that Seattle move is going to happen. I would like to send out a shout out to all those people in Seattle.
Man, I hate the NBA. They did us so dirty, man.
If they give y'all back a team, y'all be on your knees begging for it so fast, it's absurd. Have some dignity. Show some pride in yourself. Speaking of pride, Celtic pride, we'll talk to DJ Mike Hitman about this later, but can we all laugh at Danny Ainge?
We can laugh at Danny Ainge.
We have to laugh at Danny Ainge. And everybody told me about Danny Ainge and how he loves to make these trades. Danny Ainge was waiting for a perfect trade, and the perfect trade never came around, and now you see what happened. They couldn't trade for Anthony Davis. They were silly to think that this was something they should have done in the first place, but they couldn't trade for Anthony Davis because of the Kyrie contract. But part of why they had Kyrie is they thought Kyrie could get them Anthony Davis, and now Kyrie don't want to play for y'all no more. But they could have made a move for Kawhi Leonard last offseason, and they should have done it, and they did not, and that's their fault. That's their fault. They were trying to play for now and play for future at the same time behind, what, like Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown and Terry Rozier? Like, these are the guys that you just didn't want to give up? Are you kidding me? No, man. You make that move. You do that. And they didn't. I don't know why this brings me such joy, but I find it to be hilarious. We'll be back in a minute to talk about the craziness with the Houston Rockets, but first, summer is here, and you know what that means. It's barbecue season. And if you're like me, you'll be serving your friends and family the incredible meat from ButcherBox. From grass-fed beef to free-range organic chicken to wild-caught sockeye salmon for Bristol Bay, Alaska, ButcherBox has over 20 different cuts of meat to choose from with customizable boxes and a variety of other options. I am a big fan of the ground beef, the pork chops, the bacon. They said a lot of stuff. It was great. They work closely with the best farms and companies committed to raising animals humanely. This ensures not only an ethical process, but one that results in a better quality, better tasting, nutrient-dense meat with no added hormones or antibiotics ever. ButcherBox is delivered right to your door with free shipping, and a month's worth of the meat from ButcherBox comes out to less than $6 a meal. Whether you're cooking for all your friends or family or just yourself, ButcherBox has the cuts and options you need to make every meal a memorable one. And ButcherBox is offering new members free bacon for the life of your subscription, plus $20 off your first box when you sign up at ButcherBox.com/Bomani. You heard that right. That's free bacon for the life of your subscription, plus $20 off your first box at ButcherBox.com/Bomani. ButcherBox.com/Bomani. Let me tell you what else brings me great joy, and that I also find to be hilarious. The Houston Rockets. Now, right fast, before I forget, I don't know if you saw this, Gabe, but I was interviewed by the New Yorker.
Yes, I did see that.
Yeah, it seems that if you're critical of a writer on television, that's a great way to wind up getting a Q&A. But no, it was the guy who did the Isaac Chandler. He did the interview with Jalen Rose about the analytics. And then, you know, I talked about it. People saw it. And then he talked to me about, you know, some of those same issues. And he is a big Rockets fan. My thing with the Rockets and the way that they do things has always been they don't pay attention to people's stuff. That the ways that human beings interact matter. And that is the stuff that your data-driven analysis is not going to give you, and it still has a real value. Daryl Morey has made some moves over the course of time with the Rockets where I felt like no matter what the numbers told him, you could look at it and be like, nah, that's going to be a bad idea, homie, because of people stuff. One that immediately jumps to mind is when they brought Ty Lawson in to be the point guard. Like, they had a team that needed a grown-up really badly, and they brought in the least grown-up person that you could possibly imagine to be the point guard, and then they had to cut him. I don't think Ty Lawson even in the NBA anymore. And I was like, yo, man, if you knew anything about people, you know that this was not going to wind up being the right move. And so then they made the decision to bring Chris Paul in with James Harden. And I remember I was like, so who's supposed to be in charge here? Because if Chris Paul is on your team, Chris Paul is in charge. That's the only way that Chris Paul knows how to live. That's the only way Chris Paul knows how to exist. He is the guy who is in charge. Now, James Harden had never really demonstrated that he had much of a personality to indicate that he needed to be in charge. However, at that point, he was clearly a better player than Chris Paul. Can you be Chris Paul and can you be in charge if you're not the best player? That's a question that you got to ask on the front end and if you're the Rockets. Now, I understand why it is that you might have decided when they make that trade, we're just going to have to take that risk and figure it out. I see why you might do that. I just want to know what odds you had placed on this, because the likelihood of this happening as it is right now for the Rockets was sky high. Like, Tim McMahon wrote a piece for us at ESPN about the Rockets. And he said one thing is that Chris Paul tries to coach James Harden, which James Harden absolutely does not like. Right? And actually, it was interesting for me to read that because I was like, ooh, I have a tendency to do that. But he does not like being coached. And I think he doesn't like being coached by a guy who's that he's better than. At the same time, I imagine that the things that Chris Paul is telling James Harden to do are probably really good ideas that he should listen to. But that don't matter. That's not the issue. That's not the concern. And so now we're finding out that these dudes are tired of each other, largely because Chris Paul is being Chris Paul. And by the way, I think Chris Paul is right about this. The Rockets need an offense that have some more ball movement. This, we're just going to let James Harden isolate and then Chris Paul stands off to the side. That's not what you do with a guy that makes $40 million a year. Especially not what you do with a guy who makes $40 million a year because of what he's capable of doing with the ball in his hand. And so Chris Paul then is then like, hey, if I'm going to be running the offense, then I want Harden out of the game. I'm not mad at him for saying that he wants Harden out of the game when he runs the offense, because I don't know how much of the Rockets you watch, but when I watch and Chris Paul will be running the offense, James Harden was just over there resting. It was like they were playing 4-on-5 when that would happen. And so, like, I don't blame Chris Paul under that. If he's like, look, man, this dude is going to be over there standing there, and get him out of here and get somebody that's going to make a cut, that's going to make a move. Like, Chris Paul does look to be a step slower and everything else, but Chris Paul also looks to be in an offense that really I don't think fits around the things that he does best. And all of this, I think, was like, you could see this from a distance that these things were going to happen. And then once they made the decision that they were just going to run the ISO heavy offense, I understand that that is the most effective thing they felt like they could do. But they had to understand that this was not tenable, that this was not sustainable, that with the personality mixes that you had there, you were going to need to go out there and do something else. And now here we are with the Rockets, who, oh, by the way, Gabe, one could argue they might be the second best team in the West.
Yeah, I mean, the last three seasons, they almost beat the Warriors.
Yeah, and now the Warriors aren't the Warriors, at least in the way that they were constructed before. They still have James Harden. Capella looked mighty useless when he was out there playing against the Warriors this year, but there are other places that they can use them. Like, this is a wild situation. This team is still pretty good, but it also does look like they don't look like they got everything they need. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, which is part of why Maury wants to break it up.
Yeah, but I'm not sure what else they need. Like, if you're watching the Rockets, I mean, I guess they need more shooting, right? Like, Eric Gordon is a good player to have to play alongside Harden and Chris Paul, but I do think they need more shooting. They could really use a big who could shoot. I think that's something that you could say, because I love PJ Tucker, but he's still an undersized dude. Like, it would help if they had a big that could space the floor, or, you know, that would be good. Like, there are things that they need, but at once, this team feels like it's in total chaos. On the other hand, it feels like they're right close to getting a ring. Like, let's think about this. We were ready to break the Rockets up in part because they lost in the second round of the playoffs this year, after they had made Game 7 of the conference finals last year. But part of them losing in the second round of the playoffs this year is because they happened to catch the Warriors in the second round this year. And so what that did was that gave us like a legitimate month to pick this roster apart and talk about everything that was wrong with it. If they had gone six games with the Warriors in the NBA Finals, and then just 2 weeks later, Kevin Durant and Klay Thompson get hurt, we look at the Rockets and we say, yo, their window just opened up. Instead, all this other stuff happened, and now we're like, yo, the Rockets look like they're falling apart. And somehow both of those things might be true at once. They just got to hope that Chris Paul can play very well next season, because they owe that dude $40 million a year for three more, I think. They've just got to hope that dude is ready to ball. And if that dude comes out there and he's ready to ball, then they've got a very good chance in the West. And I think it's fair to have some faith that Maury will make some moves. He might like overlook some things in the process, but he's earned the trust that he'll go out here and figure out how to make a move. They got an owner who says he wants to win and says that he will spend whatever it takes. Except, oh, I forgot. I don't even know who's going to be their coach next year. You remember that, Gabe? I've completely forgotten about that. They still trying to figure it out with Mike D'Antoni.
Yeah, just another layer to this crazy story, right?
And the owner is out here complaining about Chris Paul's contract in public. I can't imagine how that went over with Chris Paul. Also, how tall is the owner? Don't let the owner be shorter than Chris Paul. Chris Paul going to get in his face.
Yeah, so Maury is really tall.
Yeah,
right?
Maury is really tall. Fertitta is not.
And Fertitta is slightly shorter than him, but not like markedly shorter. I think, how tall is Maury? Like what, 6'3 or something?
Yeah,
like
I would
that?
Think
6'4?
So.
I want to say Fertitta is probably around 6.
Oh, okay.
So we got a little square up situation.
I was kind of hoping that like Fertitta would be like 5'9 because Chris Paul doesn't get to feel, he don't get to be the tall man.
Yeah,
man.
I was hating on the short man again.
I'm not hating on the short man. I am just simply saying that I can understand what life is like for the short man, and I personally would find it to be refreshing if I were that height and finally got the chance to stand over somebody.
Yeah, yeah, that's what it's like for the short man like me.
How tall are you, Gabe?
I'm about 5'8".
You know what? I never noticed that until you said it.
Really?
Mm-mm. I never noticed that. And you know what? That tells me about you. This is for real. That means that you comport yourself with the respect and dignity that you project as though you like one of us.
Well, that comes from a lifetime of being short and having to project yourself, right?
No, you don't. I'm serious. You're doing well. Like my homeboy Jamal, I don't know if he's listening right now. Jamal about 5'6". I did not know Jamal was 5'6" until like 6 or 7 years into me knowing him. I had no idea because he don't kick it that way. Let me tell you this about Jamal too. I may have told you the story about him. Jamal got like these real thick Coke bottle glasses. Shout out to Jamal also. He just finished his PhD in urban planning at Portland State. Congratulations to him. He got these real thick glasses. He got these dread, real long dreads or whatever. And you might see him and you might believe that he a nerd. Jamal like an nth degree Taekwondo black belt.
Damn.
That's why that dude walk around like that.
Yeah, don't want no problems with Jamal.
Yes, yes. It is a quiet confidence, just to be clear. Jamal, break your leg with a pencil sharpener. You don't want no problems with him, right? So you like my man Jamal, and that's high praise coming from me. There we go.
Respect.
That's why you got, it didn't really dawn on me till right there why you be out here defending the little man so tough.
I gotta stand up for my brothers.
Yeah, I'm with you. I tell you this though, I bet Chris Paul would see you and be like, what's up, little homie? I would never do you like that. But that's because Chris Paul ain't used to lording over people. So, like, if Chris Paul found out Fertitta had been popping off at him, and then he got to walk up on Fertitta and look down at him, he'd be so happy. But if Chris Paul got to walk up on Fertitta and look up at him, he going to be so anxious. Don't pat him on top of the head, Fertitta. He don't like that at all. I mean, neither would I, but Yeah, so anyway, the Rockets are chaos. The Rockets might win the West, and the Rockets might have a different coach, and none of it makes any sense, but all of it makes perfect sense, and I confuse myself halfway through this segment.
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you. Now, if you haven't heard.
All right, Bomani, this first story comes from pop culture.
This is Greg Cody from the Miami Herald and the Levitard Show. So O.J. Simpson is on Twitter now. He did it right about on the 25th anniversary of his ex-wife and her friend's double murder. Said in his first tweet he had some getting even to do. Said it was about setting the record straight. Showed an immediate tone deafness for his message. But, hey, there's an appetite, I guess. Much of the nation still believes O.J. got away with murder, but some surely think he was wrongly accused or that he did his time for that armed robbery. I mean, he had 650,000 followers after 3 days. Not to assume many of those weren't merely curiosity seekers. But here's the thing. We see this all the time with shamed public figures trying to rehab their image and ease back into the mainstream. Less than a year ago, Tonya Harding went on a promo tour trying to suggest she was the victim in that goon attack on skating rival Nancy Kerrigan. British boxer Tyson Fury is trying to pitch himself as the next big thing in America, almost as if we don't know or don't care that he's an unrepentant homophobe and misogynist. Did you catch this? Imprisoned sexual predator Bill Cosby went on Instagram this weekend with a Happy Father's Day message that began, "Hey, hey, hey, it's America's dad." I wish I weren't serious. Somewhere, Louis C.K. is wondering if enough time has passed. Look, shame celebrities, of whom O.J. might always be the grand marshal. Y'all have every right to try to do the image makeover. As long as you understand, you don't get to say how the message is received. We do.
Yo, first of all, Cody sent a tweet saying he was going to be on the show, and I thought he was joking. I didn't realize he somehow actually snuck Greg Cody into the show.
Yeah, so I actually thought it would be interesting to have Cody on for like an extended, if you haven't heard, where the two of you guys chatted for like 10, 15 minutes about this OJ thing, and then he's actually on Levitard today.
Yeah.
During the time that we're taping, so I was like, all right, that's not going to work.
No, I like Greg. I like Greg. Greg has such a fascinating way with words. So OJ is on the tweets, and 500,000 people followed OJ on the tweets, and I am very curious as to why. Like, for example, and just to be clear, I'm not saying these are the same kind of guys, right? I'm just letting you know that you'll understand the example as it goes. But I don't follow the president on Twitter. It is not because I do or do not agree with the president. But anything the president tweets on Twitter, if I need to know about it, somebody else is going to tell me. I don't have to be up to the minute on it, right? I don't need no notification on what the president is doing. Somebody else can do that. I already turned off my notification for my news feed in like early 2017 because it was depressing me. Anyway, why do you need to get like up to the minute OJ updates? Like click follow for what? Somebody will let you know if OJ does something. Now, I said something on TV that I'm going to say again because I'm a little confused here. OJ said he was getting on Twitter to do some getting even. Does that mean he plans on getting killed? Because I feel like for a lot of people, that would be their definition of how OJ Simpson would get even. That would be how he has to get even. I'm assuming he's talking about trying to get even on those dudes who got him sent up to jail in Nevada. Except, isn't OJ on parole?
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like getting on the internet and talking about how you about to get even with people is not a good idea when you're on parole. I feel like that'll get them to call you in for a chat. And isn't he still living in Las Vegas? Like, he's now living in Las Vegas, which is where this, you know, where he got locked up in the first place.
I think he's actually living in South Florida.
No, he did that the last time.
Oh, let me check.
I think he stayed in Vegas now. On this one. Oh yeah, no, it's cool. Like if you got it right, you got it right. But I thought I saw something yesterday that said that he was thinking about going back to South Florida, but he stayed in Vegas.
Yeah, O.J. Simpson relocated to Florida.
Okay, so he did go to Florida this time.
Yeah.
Okay, I think they must have said he was thinking of staying in Vegas. But either way it goes, you ain't got to pay attention to him, man. You just don't. Like he did this. I got to be careful saying he did this thing because he was acquitted. But there was this thing that he was at the center of. That was 25 years ago. We are allowed to let him go. I was never holding on to him that tight in the first place. It's done. I thought my man Ezra did that movie, and it was about OJ, and we didn't have anything else we had to do. Now OJ is on Twitter. Good luck with that.
All right, Bo, this next story comes from Tech.
Hey, this is Drew Harwell. I'm a tech reporter at the Washington Post, and we're writing about deepfakes. They're AI-generated videos that look really deceivingly convincing, and they've made it easy for pretty much anybody to make a video that can look like somebody is saying something they've totally never said. And so there's a huge worry about these in politics and for the 2020 campaign. There's the feeling that, you know, the Russian and other campaigns that injected misinformation into the campaign the first time could be supercharged with these fake videos. And so there's a number of AI researchers across the country that we've been talking to about, is there a way you can detect these things automatically? Maybe build an AI to look for the video creating AI and save a lot of people some hassle and deception. And they're working on it, but they're not yet there to where they feel like they have a tool that can help detect these things. So we're left in this middle area where we can't really know if the videos we're seeing online are real or fake. Fake videos are a huge problem already in pornography and harassment. A lot of women have been targeted with these fake videos where their face has been injected into a porn video that they were never involved in. But now we're sort of seeing it on a political level. And so there's some concern that this would be fake news on steroids, and it could potentially fool a lot of people into thinking they saw something they never saw.
Can you imagine trying to convince people that that wasn't you in that pornographic video and nobody believing you?
Yeah, I mean, one part of the story, he interviewed a woman named Rachel Thomas, who's a co-founder of Fast.ai, a machine learning lab in SF. She was saying that fakes often, particularly now, don't have to be that compelling in order to still have an impact. I mean, once something's out there in the ether, you have a very difficult job of trying to pull it back or convince people that that wasn't in fact you.
But especially if all you got is, it wasn't me. Right?
Yeah.
Like, if it wasn't you, the only thing you've got is, it wasn't me. And there's a whole song about how implausible the idea of saying it wasn't me is, right? Says you got me on camera. It wasn't me. That's what this is. It wasn't me. Yo, there's a video of you right here. Wasn't me. What you mean it wasn't you? Wasn't me. It wasn't you. Look, I don't know what to tell you.
The thing about it is, too, is that most people don't understand the complexities of this AI deepfake stuff. So for you to say, it wasn't me, this is a fake, they're like, yeah, right.
Right, yeah, and even if they knew it, right? No, but I'm telling you, it wasn't me. They be out here making videos, but it's Photoshop. I was hacked. These are all the things that are actually happening, and nobody wants to hear it.
They look so real.
Yes, yes. It's bad news. It's bad news.
God. All right, this last story. My man John Blake couldn't get approval from CNN to join us this morning, but I thought it was a really interesting story, so I definitely wanted to do it and just kind of get your thoughts on it. The story is titled, What It's Like to Be a White Woman Named Lakeisha. Shout out to Kyrie, former PA on the show, who sent this to us. So there's a blonde-haired, blue-eyed woman living in Ohio named Lakeisha, and her mom is named LaDeanna. And they're both blonde-haired, blue-eyed women, so they kind of got a white Dante situation going on here. And her mom, LaDeanna, says she wasn't trying to make a political statement with her daughter's name. She was trying to settle a disagreement between she and her husband, Frank, and they couldn't agree on a name when she got pregnant. They eventually came up with a compromise. I didn't see this part. Well, vacationing in Florida. It had to be Florida, right?
Yes. So, I read the story. The story of Lakeisha. Kind of interesting, mostly funny. The story that John Blake wrote for CNN, patently ridiculous, right? Because his thing was, if any white person wants to know what it's like to be black for a moment, let's talk to white Lakeisha. And that's not how being black works, right? That's not how it goes. You could go name your child, what's a good name that fits here? Rebecca. Right? You go name a black woman Rebecca. That ain't gonna tell her what it's like to be white. That's not it. What are we? Amy? You know, Sarah? Those are some of those that white people really held on to that black people didn't really do. We didn't really go so hard for those names in trying to claim them. Cause you know, once we decide, we get a couple of us that get a name, white folks don't want it no more. Like, I don't know what the day was that white people looked up and were like, yo, we gotta stop naming our kids Clarence. Yeah, no, it's theirs now. Yeah. Nope, Calvin, can't do that. In fact, just get out of the C's altogether. Nope. Don't go with Carlos. I hear they're making moves on that one, too. Right? I don't know exactly, like, what the line is on this one. But, yeah, this woman is Lakeisha, and it wasn't there a part in there about how she broke down crying at some point because of people making fun of her for having a black people name?
Yeah, she described every time her name is read out loud and people see her, they get a good laugh out of it. And she described her discomfort in that. And to your point, it's like, is being black a moment of discomfort? No.
No. Well, what she doesn't get is they're not laughing at you. They're laughing at us. Right? Like, when I laugh at it, I'm just laughing at the general concept. But, like, the things she's talking about that feel, like, kind of hurtful to her, those aren't things about you, ma'am. Those are things about black people. Like, that's where it is. But I'm sorry. You a white person named Lakeisha. That's going to be funny, right? Like, I ain't going to laugh in your face about it all the time for the whole time that I know you unless we somehow manage to come up with a nickname for you. Because I do kind of feel like if your name is Lakeisha, we should probably give you a nickname that matches, you know, like Peaches, Kiki. I see that she, you know what, that's, she could easily be a Kiki. And every other way, most of the Kikis I know, in fact, I got a cousin named Keisha. She go by Kiki. I don't know if she like, that we know that she go by Kiki, but she go by Kiki. I think some other nicknames that my family, people in my family have tried to shake themselves from, but we ain't necessarily gonna let them. Oh yeah, white Lakeisha, she could be like my cousin Sweet Pea. Sweet Pea don't like it for us to call her Sweet Pea no more, so how about Sweet Pea, you can pass on your nickname of Sweet Pea on to white Lakeisha. She's Sweet Pea now.
That's what we do in this country, give nicknames.
That's right. That's if those people had some real creativity about them, that's what they would be doing. Come on, Kiki, it's gonna be all right, I promise.
Hey, this is Bomani. You have reached the right time voicemail. Say whatever you want. Get creative with it. But this is your place to talk back to the show. So talk back. Peace.
Hey, man. Normally, I do a little video and solicit your, get your voicemails at a segment like this. Had not talked to my man, DJ Mike Hitman, in a while. And Mike, you say that the 939 is back open?
Bo, it's the boom boom room now. I done went back, you know. I feel bad because Eddie Murphy never got, you know, in life, he never got the boom boom room. So I went back and looked at the old video. That's how I'm going to call it, the boom boom room now. And a tribute to Eddie Murphy, since he didn't ever get the boom boom room established, I established for him. It's off the chain, Bo. You got to come to Chicago, Bo. I got you. Bo, matter of fact, send me a picture of you so I can put you on the Hall of Fame wall. You got to send me a picture. Sign it. Please sign it. Send it to me.
Oh, no. Nah, I'm going to send it to you, man. But what you got going in the boom boom room?
I got the TV. I got a dancer floor. I got the Saturday Night Dance. You remember Saturday Night Fever dance floor? I had it light up. I got a red, purple, green, yellow, all the colors. I added three poles. I used to add two. I went to three now, Bo. We got three poles like the fire department. Slide down from the second floor to the first floor. And we got the cage to take you up in the ceiling, and you can dance all night. Now, I don't know who's controlling the cage to get you back down, but it's lovely when I see you up in the air.
Mike, you loving this, ain't you?
I love this, Bo. I love living.
Mike, man, I wanted to talk to you. You're a Boston Celtics fan. We didn't do a segment today on the Boston Celtics, but I thought that you would. That's how you feel, man. You know, I think you guys thought you was going to get Anthony Davis, maybe. Kyrie looked like he's going to leave. How you feeling?
Hey, Bo, I'm going to tell you something. As a Celtics fan, I could admit, I am the president when it comes to the Celtics basketball. All respect to Danny Ainge. I hope you're resting well. I'm glad that they pumped more of IV in you because you realize you didn't need Anthony Davis. And, you know, Kyrie, I never liked him. I don't love him like a stepchild. We should have never got him. Now, Celtics fan, let me make y'all happy. Let's go to Indiana, right up the road from Chicago. Get Danny Young. Bring it to Boston. Now take a ride down to Charlotte and bring my man, Kim, to walk in. And keep the core, and we will win. Now, we need a backup point guard. What would be a perfect backup point guard? We did them wrong. Let's go back up to them and get ISA and bring them back. Bo, we can win. We can win with that starting lineup.
You really think that team could win?
Bo, then we go to the final. We went to the final. We went to the championship with Rozier. How come we can't win?
I don't know, man. Rest of the East got good, man.
Bo, let me tell you something. The East has got weak. One of them guys going to leave from Philadelphia. Kawhi is already packed to go to L.A. because he ain't going to stay another cold segment in Toronto. You can forget that. And then four people got shot there, too. You think he want to be around there? And he got braids. Come on now. The East going to be weak. And it's all up to the Celtics. Whatever Danny Ainge did. And Danny Ainge been resting. He's looking good. And I know he's going to come out with something big. We didn't need him. Let me tell you something, folks. That kid is from Chicago. He's not a winner. And LeBron James got so many miles on him, he doesn't want to go to Hollywood and make movies. All they're going to do is get him in Jam 3. That's all. They depleted. They ain't got a team. They got rid of everybody. We still set boat. We still got draft picks. We got assets. We are Boston. We supposed to win championship. L.A. is Hollywood. They just get Oscar award. Not championship.
Hey, man, let me ask you this, man. Why don't you like Kyrie?
What? He look like Shrek. I don't even like Shrek. That man look like Shrek to me. I don't like Kyrie. He's not a good ball player. He ain't proficient. He's all about himself. He's arrogant, and he need a cone, and he needs somebody to do his facial because that beard is raggedy, and I don't like him, and he's not down. Where are you from anyway, Paul?
You're from New Jersey.
Oh, he's soft as a pillow. No wonder. And if they come out of New Jersey, it's soft. The hockey player is stronger than him. He should have played hockey.
What do you think about him thinking the world is flat?
Paul, anybody who went to Duke and think the world is flat, you know he ain't passed that test. You know he ain't take the test. And nowhere in hell, the world is flat. But Christopher Columbus rolled on a boat. I don't think you believe who Christopher Columbus is. They said the world is flat. And then make a joke of he's just kidding now, Bo. He didn't go to Duke. Somebody took that test for him. Come on, Bo.
Mike, I ain't talked to you in a while, man. What else been going on?
Bo, I'm living a good life. Bo, I got an Excalibur. Candy red. I got a two-seater Excalibur, Bo. Candy red. And you know what else I'm gonna do, Bo? I'm gonna take over Chicago, Bo.
How?
How? Next time they have an election, I'm running for mayor. I need candidates. I'm gonna get you, Frank, Brian Scalabrine, and y'all gonna be my backup. I'm gonna run this town. These people love me here, Bo. You see what I did for Father's Day? All the fathers was out there. I treat them to food at the Boom Boom Room. I put it on Twitter. I show people how fair these people. I like doing things like that. I like giving back to the community. I'm not even from Chicago. I'm from Alabama. But I love Chicago. One of the beautiful places I can ever land in here in Chicago. Beautiful.
Hold on, what's your platform going to be, running for mayor?
Huh? Running for mayor? My platform? Vote for me. I make sure everything be right. The police department be taken right. The public schools be taken right. All the teachers will be taken right. All the people, the homeless on the street will be taken right. And everybody in the community will be taken right. I will make sure that. Vote for me. I'll make sure I got your back. Trust me. I like to share things. My slogan, little thing won't hurt anyone. I take from the rich, give to the poor.
The fellas, Darnell, good gang, they going to be out there with you?
Oh, boy. Hold on. Darnell, Spanish Flash, Lucky Strike, good day. And me, and we just added a new guy to the board. Roscoe Bosco Pico Trey is the man now.
What's up with him?
Roscoe, let me tell you a little quick story. Roscoe is a native from Detroit, came to Chicago, they had no place, he was trying to get familiar with the guys, and then one day, he came to the pool hall and beat everybody in the pool. I said, I want that guy. Anybody with gold teeth for feeding people with one eye, I need him. That means he can shoot. He know how to shoot good in pool. And I can put all my money on here, he's going to win. That's why his name is Roscoe Boxo Pico Train.
Did you say he has one eye?
One eye. It's like Sammy Davis Jr. That's what a glass eye is. Okay. It worked for Sammy Davis Jr. It could work for Roscoe.
Mike, you meet the most interesting people.
Yeah, I love people, Bo. I love people. And, Bo, now, hold on. The Boom Boom Room, we got dancers. We got dancers. And we got good food. You remember the cook at the, remember I took you to the 6978 restaurant, Bo?
Yeah.
I took all them cooks out of there. They're at the Boom Boom Room, Bo. They cook at the Boom Boom Room. They got to come out of that restaurant and come party with us now.
That food was good.
And, Bo, and another good thing about that, you get everything free when you walk in there. You VIP, man. You ain't never got to pay for a meal and drink. Everything is free. Bring your friend, your cousin, your nephew, your uncle, whoever. Everything's free for you. You the main man for the Boom Boom Room. But we got to have a picture, Bo, because people like, you don't know Bo Monty Jones. All these dumbass people in Chicago, I talk to you, walk with you, drove you around Chicago, and they still don't understand that I know you.
Now, I'm
once I get a picture with an autograph on it, it's ever Bo, I am a play. I would play the thing at the mom. Every time my mom's birthday comes, I play the tribute you do that. They say, that's Bo Monty Jones. Damn, that boy sounds good. You see that, Bo? But we did a little editing to it. We hyped it up, put a little more bass to it, and put some music behind that. Boy, you sound like Liberace, man. You the man.
Hey, man.
And I love Liberace.
You know I appreciate it, man. Now, next round I make to Chicago, I'm going to do that. I'm going to get that picture sent to you. Hey, man.
One more thing I need to ask you. What was that guy named? What was it? Strickland?
Yeah.
Text me his number. Tell him July 13th, he came to my party with a friend. At the backyard, we have our pick and your pick year, July 13th, because he used to be in Chicago then. Send me his number and tell them, if you're in Chicago, folks, tell everybody, come to the picnic, and I will make sure everybody eat. He'll know what I'm talking about, Bo. He was there. He was a witness.
Hey, Mike, you know I got you, man. I appreciate the call. I am sending you his phone number right now.
You make sure you send it, and folks, and tell the people Bo. One more thing. I got to tell you that. I'm glad you called me. You and Pablo been shaking. Y'all got to step your game up and dressing, man. Y'all with Pablo walking out with that T-shirt like he just got it for J.C. Penney. I don't appreciate that. And then you got more gel in his hair. Tell him, let it be natural, bro. Let it be natural. Let it flow. It's too still. It's too still. If that wind was open, his hair wouldn't even move. Let it flow, bro. Tell him he needs to let it flow. If he was in a drop top, it would be nice when it's blowing. He got here. We don't have here. Tell him that.
I'll pass it on. He don't be listening to me, Mike. Maybe he'll listen to you.
Yeah, tell him I need him with a shirt and a tie, Bo. Shirt and a tie. I can't stand him turning next day. Make you think he in jail. Choking his neck. How we going, Bo?
All right, Mike. And ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing a couple times a week. My man Gabe Bassain handled everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Thank you to our If You Haven't Heard contributors. Thanks to Greg Cody of the Miami Herald. Check him out talking about O.J. Simpson jumping on Twitter. Also, thanks to Drew Harwell of the Washington Post. Check out his story about deep fake videos. And thanks to Gabe for getting people hip to game on the Lakeisha story. She white. Thanks to DJ Mike Hitman. Appreciate that greatly. Thanks to our sponsor, Butcher Box. Also, a reminder, the Right Time Book Club is coming soon. The book is Jim Brown, The Fierce Life of an American Hero by Mike Freeman. Our first guest will be Howard Bryan. Check that out soon. Also, the Woj Podcast coming back for you on July 1st, just in time for the start of free agency. Remember, subscribe to The Right Time and the Woj Podcast. Wherever it is that you get your podcast, rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater, and we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.
The Right Time with Bomani Jones is presented by Goodyear. Discover the possibilities. Goodyear. More driven.